Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Terrible Tales. This is Mummy Work. Okay, thanks.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. It has been a little while. Sorry if you've been hanging out for the next episode, but it is finally here. Welcome back. I am Jordan and I'm your host of the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. I am a mum of two beautiful boys, Jai and Ali. They are just turned 3 and, 15, 16 months, not sure. But yeah, I live here in the beautiful Papamoa in the Bay of Plenty, and I am just, doing all things birth. This podcast, I've got Your Birth Project, which is my online hypnobirthing course online store, and more recently launched the Your Birth Project Journal, which is a beautiful tool for birth preparation, pregnancy reflection, postpartum planning, and I just know it's going to become such a beautiful keepsake for years and years and years to come. So if you want to check that out, I'll make sure I link it in the show notes. What have I been up to? Gosh, I just feel like December's flown by and I've got nothing done, so hence why this podcast is a little bit delayed. And yeah, so I finally got a couple recorded this week, which is really nice, and hopefully can have them out to you each week over the holiday period. I usually do a recommendation at the start of these episodes. Honestly, I feel like I've just been on survival mode, like struggle street throughout December. But one of my recommendations are a few things that I've been watching if I have like 20 minutes of open eyes before I fall asleep in bed. So I've been watching Yellowstone on Neon. I am up to date with that. Absolutely loved it. Really struggled through the first few episodes, like whenever we started watching it last year maybe, but then got hooked, and now I just wait for each episode to come out. So that's my first one. I've been watching cringy Australian Love Island, which I got addicted to. I'm not going to give you any spoilers just in case you're watching it too, but yeah, loved that. What else? Oh, I watched the documentary about Fakadi, the White Island eruption documentary. So Fakadi is the island that erupted and there were people on it, and that documentary was pretty heart-wrenching but also a really good watch, like really, really interesting. So those are the things I've been watching lately, a bit of a mixed bag. If you are looking for something new to watch, then yeah, that's what we've been hooked on lately. This week I am speaking with beautiful Julia, and she is a mum to one little Maisie, and she talks us through her pregnancy journey. She suffered from an early pregnancy loss initially, then fell pregnant with Maisie, and talks us through what that experience was like. We work through her birth story and then into her postpartum period where she was in lockdown and unfortunately on the Northland side of the Auckland border, and the rest of her sort of support network was on the Auckland side of the border. So quite interesting to hear her speak through that. But I hope you love the episode. I know that Julia has a lot to share with us and lots of really relatable things in there too. So I'd love to hear your feedback. Feel free to send me an email, jordan@yourbirthproject.com, or you can just send me a message on Kiwi Birth Tales on Instagram if you want to hit me up there too. Okay, we will jump into the episode. I hope you love it. Make sure you connect with me afterwards. Enjoy. Hey, Julia, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I've been a bit of a creep following you for a while and desperate to make a guest appearance. So I'm really, really glad I get to do this.
Oh, I'm very pleased to have you here today. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Sure. So I'm based up in Mangawhai, which is kind of about an hour northeast of Auckland. So I live there with myself and my husband and our little girl Maisie, who is just about 1.5. And we've also got a menagerie of animals because we're on a bit of a lifestyle block. So we've got Barkley the dog and Pushka and Freddie, our two cats as well. Yeah, and I'm a lawyer down in Warkworth, so yeah, spend a bit of time in Warkworth, which is kind of where I grew up as well.
Yeah, Oh, very cool. Nice. And do you want to talk us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you and your husband?
Yeah, so Trev and I got married in 2018, and I think like with every wedding, there comes the pressure to have children shortly afterwards. But we waited a couple of years and then decided sort of mid-2020 to give it a go. And we got pregnant relatively easily. Like first month of trying, we had I think it's like a blighted ovum, or so I had like an early miscarriage, probably around the 6 week mark. And then we sort of tried, well, we kind of thought, oh, we'll try again, but see how it goes. Tried that month, and then I sort of got pregnant off my miscarriage period, if you like. And that one stuck, which was great. And I took a test like the day before my 30th birthday, and kind of like the crazy thing was is that I had like really vastly different sort of symptoms during that kind of like 2 week, I'm going to say it's a mind fuck of 2 weeks, where you're like, am I, aren't I, who knows, is this like a period symptom, is this like a pregnancy symptom? Yeah, so I had these like vastly different symptoms both times around. So in the second time around, I kind of had no symptoms, so I was like, oh, you know, it hasn't happened, which is, you know, understandable. And so yeah, I just took this test the day before my birthday, and it was positive, and I couldn't, we were sort of like, oh, okay. And the like funny thing was that the weekend afterwards, I'd planned like this massive 30th birthday party and had like heaps of people coming over. And so I had to, I guess, be kind of sneaky about how I yeah, did a bit of pregnancy concealment, seeing as it was, yeah, early days.
And did you feel like any anxiety or anything like that the second pregnancy, having had a miscarriage the first time?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I would go to the toilet and expect to see like blood in my undies, or, you know, I'm constantly like being like, do I still feel like sick, or are my boobs still sore, or, and definitely like getting over that same like time. Second time round, I was kind of like desperate to get over that like 6 weeks and be like, okay, yep, I'm still pregnant, like it's still there. So yeah, and then I guess like once you have that kind of anxiety in the first trimester, you're then like, oh gosh, is the baby okay? Like, is the baby healthy? So I think it kind of, there was definitely some more anxiety the second time, and I think it kind of, it really took me quite far into my pregnancy to feel like comfortable, if you know what I mean.
Fair enough. I'm sure there are lots of people out there who can relate to those sorts of feelings, particularly, in that first trimester. And did you have many symptoms? Like what were your symptoms in this pregnancy?
Yeah, I like this. I think the sore boobs were like the giveaway for me. And I was kind of like, I felt sick, but I didn't throw up, which I was really grateful for. But just that, yeah, constant like hungover feeling. And it was, I just remember it being at like the end of the year in that first trimester. And the end of the year is like typically a horrendously busy time at work for me. And so I just remember feeling like an absolute piece of shit, being like, so busy and yeah, so fatigued. Yeah, I'd like fall asleep on the couch at like 7:30 each night, and yeah, so fairly standard symptoms.
Awesome. And had you decided to go with a midwife, or what did that look like for you?
I had got a recommendation from a friend for a local midwife. We're super lucky, being sort of in the Warkworth area, that we have the birthing centre here and the group of midwives that work out of that centre as well. So I got this midwife, Mel, and she was a wizard. She used to be an ED nurse before she was a midwife. So for me, it was yeah, really great to have that kind of like really clinical mindset. But she was also like, hey, you know, whatever sort of birth you want, like, I'm cool with it. Like, we'll do whatever you want. So I felt really, really safe with her. And I also felt like she could like control the situation or get serious when she needed to, sort of thing.
Awesome. All the things you want from a
Yeah,
midwife.
definitely.
Cool. Yeah, awesome. And did you do all of the testing that's offered in pregnancy, and did you find out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so we did the 12-week scan, which was fine, and then we did the 20-week scan, and we also found out the gender, so we found out we're having a little girl. And yeah, did the horrible GD test. I didn't have to do the second one, thank goodness, but yeah, it's such a long wait having to sit
It
there
is a long wait.
in the lab as well. And then I had a growth scan. And then I actually had a couple, like towards the end, I had a couple of instances where I thought I had reduced fetal movement. So I ended up getting an extra scan, sort of like when I was in the 30s, which, yeah, you can't really make out anything at that point because the baby's so huge.
And did you, were there any concerns around the reduced movement?
No, it was always like, I would feel like I had reduced movement, and then I'd go up to the birthing center and they'd put me on the like CTG machine, and of course like it would be like everything's normal straight away. But yeah, I think that happened twice, so I kind of got the you've had to do this twice, go get a scan sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And what about the rest of your pregnancy? How were you feeling? And did you do any antenatal classes or any birth education? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, the rest of my pregnancy was great. Like, you know, everyone says second trimester, you kind of feel a bit like yourself again and you get this like spurt of energy. So yeah, that was great. I really enjoyed that part of pregnancy. I loved my pregnant body and my belly, and it was probably the first time in a long time that I would have worn like tight fitting like dresses and stuff. And yeah, so that was great. I did an antenatal class locally through the birthing center, and it was really interesting. Like, so I guess rolling back a bit, I got put onto Kiwi Birth Tales by a friend who was sort of 3 months further along than me, and so my drive into work every day is about a 40-minute each way, and so I just used to put Kiwi Birth Tales on, and I'd usually get through like an episode each way, sort of thing. So by the time I sort of got through to antenatal, I had listened to heaps of the birth tales, and had like a really, I guess, good overall view or picture about all the different types of births and how things can start one way and end up in a, you know, going off on a tangent into different ways. And so I felt like I guess I had some experience knowledge going into antenatal, but I didn't have the like practical, you know, these are the different stages of labor. And my tutor that I had, she was quite one-sided in her view on birthing. And I guess like I'm kind of more on the clinical side of things in terms of like my preferences. And she was very much trying to, I guess, be like, you know, hospitals are bad, hospitals will slow your labor down, like intervention is a bad thing. And it was like, for me, I was like, I can take it with a grain of salt. Like, I've done my own birth education elsewhere, and I can, you know, decide what information I want to take from that. But there were like women in my group that were like, you know, young mothers or mums doing it on their own, and that was potentially the only birth education that they would receive. And so I was kind of a bit like horrified to think that some women are going to go into birth thinking that it's going to be this certain way and this is the only way. And if it goes any way other than that, then it's bad. So, needless to say, I'm not usually an honest feedback kind of gal, but when she sent through that feedback request at the end, I was pretty honest with what my thoughts were on how she presented the class to us. But I got some awesome friends out of it that I basically still message them every day. So that was really, really crucial to my support network postpartum, which I will talk about later as well.
I think it's such a I'm obviously, you're talking to the converted here, because I agree about the way that, you know, birth education comes across. And I hear these stories all the time through the podcast about antenatal classes being really one-sided, or not giving, you know, all of the information and sort of full picture. And it is such a shame, and why I'm so passionate about this whole birth education space, because I couldn't agree more with the comment you make about that might be someone's one touch point for birth education. And like the way that that sort of plays into the knowledge that they have about birth, and then potentially their birth goes differently to what they've learned in antenatal and contributes to birth trauma. It's just such a cycle. So very passionate about what you've covered.
Absolutely. I 100% agree that there would be women that would have that as their only birth education, get told that it needs to be a certain way, and then things don't go that way for whatever reason, and they're left with this massive birth trauma because they didn't have the opportunity to be prepared for a different, I guess, path.
Exactly. And so you did your antenatal classes, and did that give you like a different, I know you said you were sort of feeling quite clinical about birth, but did it give you a perspective on how you wanted your birth to go, or like your birth preferences? What did that look like?
I was very much a like go with the flow sort of thing. Like I guess a massive deciding factor for me was actually my location where I live. So I live like where I am, I guess, to like healthcare is, I can drive an hour north and go up to Whangarei Hospital, but, that's a different DHB than what I'm enrolled under. Mm-hmm. And then if I go south, then it's about a 40-minute drive into Warkworth, which is the birthing centre. And then to get down to North Shore Hospital, which would be the closest hospital under Waitemata DHB, would be another 45-minute drive on top of that. So originally, I guess, I thought, I was like, you know, I'm going to have a hospital birth. That's, you know, the safest place for me to be. That's where I want to go. But honestly, the thought of like sitting in a car for an hour and a half in active labour just terrified me. And anyone, I guess, that knows the area that I live in relatively well will know there's this stretch of road called the Dome Valley, and it's like historically like, you know, a really high crash zone, and they've been doing roadworks through the Dome Valley. They've literally still doing them now, and they were doing them before Maisie was born. Like that's how long it's been going on. And there were nights where I was like pretty close to full term where they were closing the road, State Highway 1, in the evenings and doing an alternative route. And I literally had like these visions of me like trying to like get down to the birth centre or get down to the hospital and the road being closed. There were like newspaper articles in our local paper about women having to give birth on the side of the road. and so I was like, one thing for me was like, oh gosh, like, am I actually going to be able to get south, and how long is it going to take me? So I kind of came up with this plan with my midwife that we'd go to the birth centre first in Warkworth, which was like 40-minute drive, and then we'd kind of like assess things and see how things are and go from there and kind of like make the call at the time. And if things were going well, then we'd stay there. And if I felt like I needed more support or pain relief, then we'd go down to North Shore. So, and I felt quite comfortable with that as well.
Awesome. Very cool. And did you do anything to try and bring on your labour? Were you doing anything in preparation for birth you know, there's obviously so many things that you can read online about raspberry leaf tea and and genetic pressing, all that stuff. So were you doing any of that?
Yeah, I was a hard pass on the perineal massage. I was like, no, I think I'm good on that one. But I did, not really to bring on labour, but I did do some antenatal expressing just to try and get a bit of a colostrum store beforehand. But I didn't make it to my due date. So I kind of didn't get to that point where I was trying to bring on labour and do whatever I could do. Yeah, so that was probably it, really.
Yeah, awesome, cool. And you obviously just mentioned that you didn't make it to your due date. So do you want to talk us through your labour starting? Was it spontaneous? And yeah, what did your labour and birth look like?
Yeah, so I went into labour on a Friday night, which was crucial because the road was open that night. but I think I was about 39 weeks and 3 days. So I'd had about a week and a half off work. And I was probably in denial for a lot of it. I didn't lose like my mucus plug in one go. I think I kind of lost it gradually over a number of weeks. So I was kind of told by my midwife that the baby has sort of like descended into my pelvis and was quite low for quite a number of weeks. And, you know, you kind of get to that point towards the end where, you know, the baby just gets a little bit further down and you feel like you're just going to piss yourself constantly. And so I had what now I know is a bloody show, but I thought, oh, maybe this is my mucus plug coming out. and so I kind of like thought nothing of it. And then I kind of just had some like mild cramps, and this was at about 5:30 p.m. on Friday night. Texted my two friends who had like 3 month old newborns and was like, oh, I think I'm having some Braxton Hicks, like, and I hadn't had those properly either. So I'm just gonna sleep them off, like I'm gonna go to bed, sleep them off, and everything will be fine. And my husband had obviously finished work for the week, and so we kind of like went to bed, and I sort of lay in bed for a while. And then I got up at about 10:30 p.m. because I was like, oh, look, these just aren't kind of settling down. I don't think I'm going to be able to fall asleep. So I just kind of went and hung out in our lounge, and I had like a Swiss ball, and I remember putting on Downton Abbey, and I literally could not tell you a single thing that happened in whatever episodes I watched. And yeah, it just kind of progressed from there. I think I had a bath, and I was kind of, like I said, in denial. And at about like 2 a.m. my husband was like, hey, I think you're in labor. I think we should call the midwife. And I was like, no, it's so late. Like, I don't want to like wake her up or like annoy her. Like, it's nothing. And he's like, you can't really speak through these contractions, Julia. I think we should probably give her a call. So we gave her a call, and she, you know, I guess like as most midwives do, they just kind of listen to you talking to them, like listen to you through a contraction and kind of make an assessment of, you know, where things are at. And so she said, call me back in an hour at 3 and we'll assess further and then, you know, see what we're going to do. Just kind of try and, you know, relax, you know, work through the contractions. I had a contraction timer. At that point, I think they were sort of coming, you know, sort of, I think I had about every 3 minutes or so, and they were lasting for sort of a minute plus long. So we called her back at 3. I had like, I'm like super type A, so I had like lists of like things to do, things to pack that I haven't already packed, and then I had like a list of like things to do before we leave the house, like putting out the rubbish and like feeding the animals and watering the plants, like actually ridiculous stuff now that I think about it. And so I kind of like gave my husband the lists and I was like, you go and do these things. And yeah, she was just like, hey, like, go have a shower. It sounds like, you know, things are happening, and meet me at the birth center for 4 a.m. So that was great. Had a shower. Was like, it's crazy, like, how much hot water just, like, helps relieve those contractions.
Yeah.
So I found that great. I had a TENS machine that I'd borrowed off a friend. Forgot to use it. Didn't use it the entire time. And then we bundled ourselves into the car at like 3:30-ish. And I remember like on my drive to Warkworth, we passed like a local rugby club, which is probably about 10 minutes from our house. And I just remember driving past the rugby club and I was like, oh God, I've already had three contractions in the car. Like, this is shit. I got to the birth center and the drive wasn't as like, I guess it wasn't as awful as I'd like made it up to be in my mind. Like, I actually feel like I coped reasonably well. So when I was at the birth center, my midwife did an internal exam and I was at 5 centimeters, which was great. I could totally understand, like, you hear, you know, through people's stories and stuff, people that feel like, you know, things are really happening and they get to that point of being checked and they're like 2 or 3 centimeters. And I could imagine just, how disheartening that would be when you feel like you're just working so hard through this pain. So I was, so grateful that I was kind of, I guess, in that active labor sort of phase as well. So from there, I kind of just got assigned to like one of the birthing rooms and just kind of really moved my way around the room with all the different things. Like, there was the shower, which, like I said before, I found really good. There was, like, I kind of did the like kneeling over the bed on my knees, which also was helpful. My midwife was like a huge fan of spinning babies, and so we kind of tried to do some of that sort of stuff, like the side lying releases and and then I think she let me into the pool probably when I was about close to transition, so I had like my transition in the pool, and like a water birth had like never been on my radar or anything. I was kind of like, if there's a pool in there, like, fine. If there isn't, whatever, I don't care. And so I was in the pool for a while, and I guess one thing that I found really helpful is, like, usually I wear glasses or contact lenses, and I was kind of like in and out of water and stuff, so I wasn't really like wearing glasses, and I was like, I'm not putting my contact lenses in for this sort of thing. So I didn't have like good vision the entire time I was in labor, and I honestly found that as one of the most helpful things. Because I guess I didn't have like a particular focus point, and I kind of had this ability to like go into my own head a little bit, where there wasn't all these sort of outside factors that I could like really see well. So if there's any like blind gals out there going into labor, don't wear your glasses.
Love that.
I had a bit of gas at this point just to get through that like active phase, but I was just like terrible at getting the breathing right. Like, it's quite difficult, I guess, to like breathe with the right time so that it kind of peaks during your like peak of your contraction. So I was just breathing it in, like borderline hyperventilating, going, it's not working, it's not working. Or I'd get that kind of like, you know, dizzy feeling when like the contraction would be like tapering off. So
it is hard timing the gas, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
I think, I don't know if they explained it to you, but I didn't have, in my first birth, I didn't have a midwife who in the hospital explained to me how to use the gas. So I was the same. I was just huffing on it and it was working, but at the wrong time.
And I think my midwife tried to explain to me, but I guess that's kind of something that I wish I had known beforehand, like how to effectively use pain relief. So from there, so I had my transition in the birth pool. My waters hadn't broken at this point in time either. And it just, like, the pressure felt immense from that. So my midwife like, we got out of the pool, I was kind of like done with that. And she broke my waters for me. And I think at that point in time I was about 9 centimeters or something, so I was like almost ready to go. And so we got to about 8:30 in the morning, ready to push. And I spent 2 hours pushing without pushing a baby out. And during this point in time, I really discovered a new part of me that I never want to see again. One thing in our antenatal class was that our tutor was like, you know, you're going to like moo like a cow and make all these noises. And I was like, mm-mm, that's not me. I'm not going to do that. And during that 2 hours, I swear someone could have thought that the room was being exorcised of demons, because like I made every noise under the sun. Like I'm pretty sure I scared my husband with the noises I was making. I saw the fear in his eyes. It's just that awful feeling where like you just can't get comfortable. Just real disheartening when you feel like you're just pushing for so long and you're not getting anywhere.
And what was your midwife sort of, was she like talking you through that at any stage? Like what was her sort of guidance to you while you were trying to push?
She would do she was doing quite a few internal exams to kind of feel like, for some part of it, I had like a bit of a lip of my cervix that didn't kind of like pull back over baby's head completely. So she was helping like guide that back for some of it. And she, was just trying to coach me to, like, I could obviously like feel the contractions, and so coaching me to push on those, like peak of those contractions. And she was basically like, hey, look, you know, once baby was happy the whole time, like I was getting checked with the Doppler, and then I think I went on the CTG towards the end. And she was like, look, once we kind of get to that 2 hour mark, our time's kind of up at the center and we're going to have to do a transfer. I was like, cool, that's fine with me. At that point in time, I guess I kind of moved around a little bit more and got put on. I went on to like one of those birth beds with like the stirrups and everything. And I just remember, like, I think we hit the like cutoff point at that point in time, and the one of the nurses like on call at, well, I guess on duty at the birth center, like came into the birthing room, I think to maybe tell us that the ambulance had arrived. And I was like full, like, I think I maybe had like a bra on and like nothing else, like legs in the stirrups, like full frontal view, like screaming, well, like probably not, probably screaming, but like visibly distressed. And I just thought like, oh God, I hope she's not here when I make it back here. So I ended up doing an ambo transfer down to North Shore. My midwife came with me in the ambulance because she was thought that I might actually give birth on the way down. So she piled in, my husband piled in, and I also thought that like there must be some back exit in the birthing center where you like get transferred. And so you just, you know, get wheeled out the back exit straight into the ambulance. But no, you go out the front or side exit where everyone is. So both my mum and my mother-in-law were kind of like down in the like visitor's lounge, I guess you could say. And saw me kind of like in a bit of a state on the gurney being wheeled off. So we, went down to North Shore. I had the gas in the ambulance with me, and my midwife was kind of like, don't push while we're in the ambulance. Like, we don't want to have the baby in the ambulance. And it's really hard not to push when your body's trying to push a baby out. So she And I remember like just begging her for a C-section when I was in the ambulance. I was like, Mel, like, call.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Call the hospital, like, tell them that we're coming down for a C-section, like, I'm done. I want it out of me. Like, just get, you know, get it out. And she was like, oh, you know, we'll wait till we get down there and see how we go, sort of thing. And so it was like a Saturday morning on the Auckland motorway.
Oh no.
So there was traffic.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got partway down in the ambulance ride, and she was said to the paramedics, like, you need to put your lights and sirens on, sort of thing. Like, we've got to move. So yeah, we made it down to North Shore. And when I got there, there's obviously the attending doctor, and he was like, okay, we're going to prep for a Vontose delivery and an episiotomy. And I think, like, two, I guess, things I was a little bit uneducated about was, I didn't know if they gave you a local anaesthetic before an episiotomy. And so I was like, shit, like, are they just going to do it? Like, I haven't had an epi or anything. Yeah. And I kind of just didn't, I felt like a little bit uneasy about the whole, like, Vontose contraption and how that works. And so I kind of heard those two words and I was like, like, no, this is not happening. And my midwife was, like, awesome at this point in time. She just kind of took control of the whole situation. And she was like, can everyone please leave? Like, just give me 15 minutes. And like, the whole room just kind of dissipated. Like, the doctor went, the nurses went, and it was just me and her and my husband. And she, yeah, coached me through it, pushing, and yeah, baby was born within 15 minutes.
Oh, wow. You just needed a little hospital trip.
I just needed a little ride to jiggle in, into the right position.
Yeah. Amazing. And was she fine when she was born? They put her up on your chest? Yep. Or, yeah, what happened then?
Yeah. So, I should add as well that at this point, because I had pushed for so long and so hard, I had blown all the blood vessels in my eyes, so my eyes were like red.
I did that too. I did that. I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah.
No. Apparently, like, don't push with your face. Don't push with your eyes. I don't know. And yeah, so I looked like a complete vampire. But yeah, so once she was born, they just popped her straight on my chest. I remember thinking, like, how purple they are when they come out. I just, for some reason, I thought I'd have this, like, pink baby immediately, but they take a while to pink up, I guess. And yeah, so we had good skin to skin. We did delayed cord clamping. And then I had the injection to deliver my placenta, just because I had, I guess, been in that, like, active labor phase for so long. They kind of recommended that I deliver it sooner than later, and that came out no worries. Yeah, and then she was there.
And I think you said in your email, was her hand by her face?
Yes, so that was why she got stuck. And I think what my midwife thinks is that she actually grew with her hand by her face the whole time. And I don't know whether it was just, like, coincidence, but, like, all of my scans, her hands are up by her face. So whether she favored that position, I don't know, but so that little hand did a little bit of damage on its way out. And I had, I think I had, like, a second degree tear, so not too bad. And most of it internal, which was kind of good from the healing side of things. So I, once when we were having that skin to skin, the doctor came back in and did stitching, and because my midwife was pretty knackered at this point in time, so she was like, I'm gonna leave it to the like extra professionals if you don't mind. And I still remember that my doctor's name was Duncan. So Duncan stitched me up. My husband was like very much down the business end the whole time. And so he was like, the doctor was like pointing out like where he was putting the stitches, and my husband was like, oh, interesting, like having a good look. And I was like, come on, mate, like get out of there.
And so when he was stitching you up, did you have like any gas, or did they just use a local?
Yeah, I had local, and then I had gas for when the local was being administered, and yeah, that was pretty good. It was, yeah, not as terrifying as I thought it would be. That was, yeah, one thing that I kind of had a bit of a worry about on my mind as well.
Yeah, I can understand that. And so what happened from there? Did you stay at the hospital, or did you go back to the birth centre, or did you go home? What did that look like?
So we were at the birth centre for a couple of hours, and I should also add in at this point in time that my midwife had another mother go into labour, and so she kind of like delivered Maisie and then like did all the APGAR testing and stuff, and then went straight to her other mother, and she kind of disappeared for a while, and we were kind of just like there with the baby. And at this point in time, my mother and mother-in-law had also sort of come into the room with us. And then she came back, and we tried to do a bit of feeding, but it wasn't kind of working really well. Like, I wasn't really able to get Maisie to latch. So that was when our like colostrum that I had expressed was like completely invaluable. And it was also quite cute, like my mother-in-law got to give Maisie her first feed because, we had this colostrum. So I think we were at the hospital for maybe 3 or so hours. And then they kind of just were like, cool, you're discharged, ready to go back up to the birth centre. And it's funny, like, I just remember being there being like, How do we put her in the capsule? Like, we had to call like the nurse call button to be like, can someone put the baby in the car seat for us? We just felt pretty clueless. So we went back up to the birth centre in Warkworth. And unfortunately, the nurse that had seen me on the way down was there on the front desk. And she was like, oh, I didn't think you'd be back so soon. And I was like, oh, great.
Here I am.
I'm a bit more calm now. So we were at the birth centre for about 3 nights, and it was really awesome just being in Warkworth, which was like an area that we knew, and so it felt kind of like a bit of a second home for us, and all of our family and friends were close by, and it was easy to visit. And hats off to all the staff that work there, because they are just absolute angels. So Maisie was pretty good. We still had a bit of trouble feeding, so I ended up with nipple shields, and the first set I got given were too small, and they like pinched my nipples, and so by like, I think it was like by day two or day three, I had like grazes on both of my nipples. But I was really good at expressing myself, so I wasn't milked by the nurses. And so it was kind of good. Like, I would try and sort of feed Maisie with the shield, and then I would express and kind of give her a bit of a top up with a syringe. And so I didn't really have that like awful cluster feeding second night. And I don't know whether it was because I just managed to like keep her full enough or, so I was quite grateful for that. I think by like day two, my milk had come in, and I was not prepared for that. Like, that is definitely an area where we could use a bit more education in the public sector. Because like, I just didn't realize how, like, not only is it your milk coming in, but it's like inflammation of all your breast tissue, and I just had these like porn star boobs, and I have this photo of like me feeding Maisie, and my boob is like bigger than her head.
Yeah.
So massive. Yeah. And yeah, so I found that I had quite a bit of like red streakiness and yeah, like that real like rock hard feeling. And so you kind of also get like instilled in you that like, you know, watch out for mastitis. And so I was kind of a bit on high alert for all of that too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And how did you go? Like, I think you said you stayed there for a couple of nights. So how did you go overnight? And did your husband stay there with you? And yeah, what support did you get from the team while you were there that you would sort of recommend to others?
Yeah, so my husband stayed all three nights that we were there. And yeah. Like, Maisie was a really great newborn baby. Like, she was a good little sleeper in the start. Like, during the night, we had to wake her up to feed her. I'm paying for it now with the toddler phase. So we, like, there were, yeah, definitely a couple times, I think, where, like, settling her back to sleep, like, the nurses would take her for us, which was, like, just invaluable. But yeah, and I guess one thing I also didn't expect was like first postpartum, I'd close my eyes and I'd just like relive the birth over and over again. Like, I was just on such like high alert adrenaline. So I really, really struggled to actually like wind down and sleep.
Yeah.
So that whole like sleep when the baby sleeps, you know, do washing when the baby does washing, do dishes when the baby does dishes, right?
Yeah.
I really struggled to get a bit of sleep under my wing. Mm-hmm. There were other people in the centre the same time as us that had probably less settled babies, and I really felt for them. And it was, really great knowing that the nurses there would be able to help them and help settle their babies for them, because I know that they probably felt like completely wiped, like I did too. And also crazy how like muscular sore your body is for days afterwards, which like makes sense, you know, you've just run a marathon. But I guess I didn't kind of like, you know, anticipate that I'd have like that level of like just general body soreness, as well as the whole like, you know, recovery, breastfeeding, like the whole shebang.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
yeah, awesome. And so when you left the birth centre, how were you feeling, and what was it like taking Maisie home?
It was great. We were feeling kind of like, you know, the birth centre is great at like getting you in that kind of like rhythm of, you know, like feeding, changing, sleeping. So we kind of felt like we had some sort of idea of what we were supposed to do when we got home, or, you know, just follow through with the same thing. And I should have added in earlier as well that we, throughout this process, were building a house. And so we had previously been living in a shed that we had built on the property, and then our last thing to get finished in our house was our kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. And that was done on the Wednesday, and Maisie was born on the Saturday. So we had this beautiful new home, and so I was really excited and this was in July, so I was really excited to kind of like go home, nest in my new home with my little baby, and just enjoy that newborn bubble.
Yeah, awesome. And how are you feeling? Like, you know, you're obviously lots of hormones, and you've got a new baby, and your sleep is few and far between at that stage. So how were you feeling mentally, and did you notice any like major hormonal shifts or mood sort of swings in those first few weeks?
I don't think that I had that whole like, you know, day three baby blues, like constantly crying sort of thing that some people talk about. But, you know, what's postpartum without a few mental breakdowns here and there, right? So I like distinctly remember I'd like have a couple of like you know, times where things just wouldn't go my way. And I'd go and like sit in the wardrobe and cry, or my husband would make like a, you know, offhand comment with like, you know, nothing behind it, and I'd just take it so to heart. Like the resentment is real. Yeah, so I think things were as good as they could be. And I think as I got deeper into that fourth trimester, I really I think my mindset was, you know, it's such a huge adaptation, which no one prepares you for, because you don't know unless you know. And yeah, the outcome of that was that, yeah, you kind of just have to kind of work through and identify these new like feelings and you know, the whole like mum guilt and constantly like second guessing every decision that you're making, but you're always making the right decision in the end. Or, you know, what's, it's that whole like, what's the right answer? What's the right thing to do? And it's like, well, there isn't a right answer. There isn't the right thing to do. It's like, you know, depends on you and your baby.
Yeah, for sure. And did you use the nipple shields that you'd started feeding with for your whole breastfeeding journey, or what did that look like?
I used nipple shields for the first 8 weeks, and they're just like, they're a double-edged sword. Like they're great because it allowed me to feed, but they're just the bane of my life as well. Like, and in hindsight, I had two, and I don't know why I just got more. But you know, if they were both like dirty and needed to be cleaned, and like the baby's screaming, wanting to be fed, and you're just like, oh, this is so inconvenient. Like, why do I have these stupid shields? Or, you know, like I feel like breastfeeding in public is like a bit of a daunting experience in itself, but it's like when you're trying to like whip your boob out in public and then also put on a nipple shield and then try and latch your baby, it was just like an added stressor. And so we went into lockdown while I was still on the shields, and that was like my lockdown goal. I was like, I'm gonna get off these shields before we get out of lockdown. Like, I'm not feeding this baby off the shield anymore. So it was just really like a lot of Googling, a lot of like, you know, trying and failing. And yeah, eventually we got off the shields, and then, my nipples had to readjust to a non-shield feeding baby again. I feel like probably for the first potentially 12 weeks, like there was nothing easy about breastfeeding for me, and it was not enjoyable for me, and I felt, I just kept thinking like, when will I feed normally, like when will this become like a bonding experience for me and my baby, and when will it feel like, you know, less like the absolute saga that it is. And I think that it did contribute to like, I think there's this whole thing as well about like bonding with your baby once you're born, and I had a friend who was sort of a couple of months further along than me, and she said, oh, you know, sometimes I just look at my baby and cry because I just love them so much and I can't believe it. And I'm like, ooh, I don't feel like that, like what's wrong with me? I'm like, ooh, who are you? And the whole breastfeeding thing was probably one side of that as well. And it kind of made me feel like, yeah, you just have to sometimes push through it, or if it's not for you, then that's okay, it's not for you. And you know, a happy mum is the most important thing, and a fed baby is the most important thing. And if I was in the position that I was in then, with the knowledge that I have now, I might not have persevered, because it probably took more of a toll on me than I really expected it to.
I can definitely relate to those feelings too, for sure. And did you, you sort of mentioned earlier in the episode that you found a really good group of friends through your antenatal class. So how did the fourth trimester and sort of having a newborn look for you in terms of support, and what was that like?
Yeah, so My mum lives down in Warkworth, which, like I said, is about 40-minute drive from my house, and and I've got nieces and nephews, but not local to us. So this was kind of like mum's first local grandchild, I guess, that you could say. And she would be, you know, there to support me during that sort of postpartum period. And also conveniently, she's a teacher and Maisie was born on the first day of the school holidays. So she had two weeks off, which was all great until it wasn't, because when Maisie was about 5 or 6 weeks, we went into lockdown and our road is the Auckland-Northland border. So at the end of my road, there was a police cordon, and it meant that I couldn't go south of my road. And my whole support network was down there. So that was, it was really hard. And in I felt like I just, you know, you just have to get through it at the time. And I think in hindsight, when I kind of got to like look back and think about it, I was like, shit, like I did that by myself. Like that was tough. But I had these three girls up on my side of the border, and we just hung out all the time. We all, except for one of us, all of our families were on the other side of the border. So we'd just like go to each other's houses. We would, you know, do the 3 a.m. messaging, the does your baby's poo look like this message. So we just became close hard and fast. And they were just invaluable.
For sure. And how did you find your relationship and like the parenting relationship between you and your husband, and sort of sharing the load in terms of looking after Maisie and everything else that goes on, you know, that you're trying to juggle as parents? How has that looked for you guys?
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's a journey. But Trev's always been, super hands-on. As always, well, at the start, definitely always keen to change a nappy or wash a nipple shield. And I feel like everyone has that. I think for the guys out there, and hopefully I'm not stereotyping anything, but that just that whole mental load thing is just like they don't get it. It was hard to feel like you had this burden of this mental load on you all the time to make sure that your baby's needs are being met. And it's like, you know, the boys are always like, oh, you know, like, what can we do to help? We're here to help you, sort of thing. But it's like, I don't want you to help me. I just want you to like think of what to do. So I don't have to do it. I don't want to have to tell you what to do. So I feel like, you know, every month or so I lose the plot, and that's okay. He just kind of knows that it's expected these days. But he's always happy to listen to my feelings and hear me out. Sometimes I'm being completely unreasonable, or just like how like the irrational anger is just crazy. You're like, you're not doing anything, but I'm just so angry that like you get like he used to sometimes wake me up in the night snoring, and I'd be like, oh my god, how can you wake me up? I'm already tired as it is, like, you horrible person. But I think that we're good as a couple. We just have a little less time to ourselves than we did previously. But you know, there's a pretty equal division of parenting between us. And he's always been able to put Maisie to sleep, and being able to kind of like, when I stopped breastfeeding, being able to kind of be on the same level in terms of meeting her needs. Really, really good.
I can relate to a lot of what you said there, including the like monthly mental breakdown. I think like Joe and I have this conversation often around the mental load, and Like, it's actually a really hard thing to try and explain to someone, I think. And it feels like an addition to your mental load having to explain it. So we've had lots of those conversations about being like the default parent or like carrying that mental load and just all of the things that you think about that contribute to the sort of way that you're feeling and how that impacts you in a relationship as a couple when you're parenting as well. Yeah, I can relate to a lot of that. And I think it can be a really hard thing to explain, but definitely contributes to a lot of those, feelings of like anger or resentment, particularly in a postpartum period. And if you've got a snoring husband or partner, I don't think there's anything more annoying than having your partner snore next to you while you're so fucking tired that you just want to go like shut your eyes and go to sleep, and they're just snoring peacefully next to you. Like Joe moving into Jai's room when we had Ali, because Jai wouldn't like sleep without him, was actually a blessing for me because I couldn't hear him snoring.
Or like they'd snore and then the baby would like stir and you'd be like, oh my god, if you wake up this baby, you're literally dead.
I'm thinking about suffocating you and you're snoring right now.
100%.
And how have you gone like recovery wise from your birth? I know you said you had about a second degree sort of internal tear, but how did you recover from your stitches, and how did you find that?
My recovery was awesome. Before I guess I was pregnant, I did quite a lot of like strength and weight training, and I felt like that helped me massively in my labor and also in my recovery. And probably I think I was about 5 months postpartum, because obviously I couldn't get down to Auckland beforehand. I went and saw a pelvic floor physio and kind of got the all clear from her. And she was like, doesn't even seem like you've had a baby. So I was like, okay, great. That's good to know. But so I felt like, aside from my nipples, my recovery was generally pretty good.
Awesome. Cool. And is there anything that you feel like we haven't covered, or anything that you want to add that we haven't already talked about?
So the other thing I also I guess found quite different was I had a friend that had a baby 3 months after me, so I was like fresh in out of the fourth trimester. She had a baby in lockdown, which, you know, it was shit in itself. But I felt this immense, almost like jealousy that I feel like, you know, in those first few weeks you have your baby, like everyone wants to know you sort of thing. And then everyone kind of forgets about you a little bit. I felt this like almost intense jealousy that she got to go through that phase now, and like that was over for me. And she got her, you know, her support network in the same region as her. It was a feeling that I really struggled to work through a bit. And also like I feel like becoming a mum just amplified all of my feelings. I felt like I had to be everyone's therapist for all the problems, and I had to troubleshoot them for them, or I had to do things to make other people's lives easier. Like this friend that had a baby, I got my mum to like cook her a meal and drop it around, and I like ordered things online to be sent to her because I wasn't there to like be there with her, like with her newborn, and just being through it myself, and I knew how like helpful all these things were. And it inspired me into my I guess next little side thing I did, to probably like I feel like I was like that girl on Mean Girls that like turns up at the school and she's like, I just have a lot of feelings.
But
I Yeah, so I kind of like thought about how I was feeling about all of that, and I was sitting in Maisie's room on a chair, nat trapped in the dark, standard, when they're like 3 months old,
Yeah.
and I wrote a poem, and I think I had before that I must have been following Jess Ehrlich's, and
Yeah.
knew that she wrote all these sort of like poems on motherhood and stuff, and so I wrote this poem, and it was just like a really good way for me to, I guess, give my feelings out. And I sent it to two of my friends, and they're like, "Hey, this is good, Julia," and it's relatable. And so I kind of just like, I don't know, put it in my notes on my phone and kind of just forgot about it. And then, I had this friend who, had been struggling to get pregnant, and she got pregnant, and it kind of shifted our relationship. And then I got the inspiration, I guess, for my second poem, which was kind of that whole, I guess it's, I don't want to come off like that I'm getting the shittier end of the stick here, because I know that fertility is just like fertility struggles is just unconscionable, like having to deal with that yourself. But it really gave me the opportunity to reflect on our friendship, and I kind of wrote this poem to her about how it felt from my end. Yeah, so kind of since then, I kind of just keep, as things pop into my mind, I kind of write a little poem about it. And then I think I put it on Instagram or something, and I sent it to my friend who I wrote the first one about when she was having a real hard day, and she was like, "Oh, this is good. Can I share it?" Well, no, I think she just shared it without saying anything. That's what I did. I kind of made like a anonymous Instagram handle and put this poem up, posted it, and then I sent it to my friend, and she immediately shared it, and I was like, "Oh shit, okay, we're going public with this now." And yeah, since then I've kind of wrote a poem at different stages of postpartum, some about my miscarriage, some just about like that whole, fourth trimester and how it just changes who you are as a person, for the good and the bad, like how you just don't feel like yourself anymore. And then, yeah, kind of going on from there, like, I guess that whole, this whole pressure on us as mothers in functioning society to do things a certain way, to look a certain way, to be like, have it all, be put together, and that it's just like so unachievable.
So unachievable.
And so that's, yeah, kind of been like a bit of a side thing that I really enjoyed doing, like my creative vice. Yeah, I'm kind of a bit few and far between with poems. They don't come to me as fast as I'd like, but every so often I'll throw something up there. And yeah, the feedback I get from my mates is pretty good.
Yeah, awesome. That's very cool. I think it's a nice way to have like an outlet that feels like a way to be a little bit creative or just get your thoughts out of your head and onto a page or somewhere else and share them. And yeah, often is very relatable in that sort of period of postpartum. So it's really nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's that just like not feeling like you're doing it by yourself, and also that like when you have all these thoughts or feelings that aren't what you get told you should feel like, that's normal. And yeah, you just have to have no expectations.
For sure. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for coming on the podcast and
Thanks.
sharing your story with us today. I've really loved talking to you. And yeah, I know that there'll be so many people that get something from your story. So just super grateful that you're willing to share.
Thanks for having me. Now I can,
No
yeah,
problem.
stop pounding you with emails.
I love it. It's so good. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. And a reminder that this week's episode is brought to you by Your Birth Project. And the journal has just recently launched this month. I am so super proud of it and I'd love for you to go and check it out. www.yourbirthproject.com. All right, I will be talking to you next week. Have a beautiful Christmas.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.